American Novel. The NBC University of the Air presents the concluding episode of its two-part dramatization of Edward Eggleston's close-up of life on the early Indiana frontier, The Hoosier Schoolmaster, another in the series of books that live, American Novels.
You'll find the schoolmaster down there, Marm. Last cell on your right.
Thank you very much. Ralph.
Hannah, darling. Here I am.
Oh, I had to see you, Ralph. I've been called as a witness against you.
For today?
Yes. Oh, Ralph, what shall I tell them on the stand? I don't want to hurt you.
Just tell the truth, Hannah. For only the truth can set me free, if I am to go free.
Don't say that. You must go free. I'm the one who should be in this prison cell, not you.
Hannah.
If I hadn't asked you to help Shockey, you wouldn't be on trial for a robbery you didn't commit.
It's not your fault. I saved your brother Shockey from the poorhouse because it was the thing to do. And I'd do it again.
Oh, yes, but when you helped Shockey get away, you made an enemy of Dr. Small. You wanted to use Shockey to help get his own way with me. Now he's turned everybody against you.
I'm not on trial because of anything I did for Shockey. I'm here because I know too much. I saw too much on the night the highwaymen robbed the Dutchman's farm. And that's why I gave myself up and asked for a trial. Small never wanted this thing to come to court. He thought he could start a whispering campaign and organize a mob that would run me out of town. But it didn't work because I don't believe in running.
Oh, Ralph.
What worries me now is Bud. I can't understand it, Hannah. He didn't come to the trial yesterday. And he was supposed to have located old man Pearson. Pearson saw a great deal on the night of the robbery, and we need his testimony.
Time's up, miss.
Goodbye, Hannah.
Good luck, Ralph.
I think it's only proper to remind all parties that this here is a most unusual case. Master Hartsook has decided to act as his own lawyer, and accordingly, I have decided to conduct this trial as informally as possible so that Master Hartsook will not suffer from his ignorance of legal procedure. Now, Mr. Bronson, would you care to resume the case for the state of Indiana?
I would, Your Honor. My first witness for today is Mr. Pete Jones. Would Mr. Pete Jones please come to the stand?
Yep, I'll come if I get through that test.
Just put him aside.
Mr. Hartsook. Bud, you've come at last. Did you find Pearson?
No, I couldn't locate him. I found somebody else who can help you.
Who?
Walter Johnson, one of Smith's gang. If Johnson don't talk, I'm going to be mighty surprised.
What makes you so sure?
Because I did my best to make sure.
You didn't use force, Bud.
Yes, but not the kind you mean. I used God's force.
What do you mean?
I've been taking Johnson to revival meetings, trying to convert him and get him to make a clean breast of Small's dirty dealing.
Do you think he'll testify?
I hope so. I tried to put the fear of God into him, but I don't know if I got the fear of Small out of him.
Shh.
Pete Jones, you swear to tell truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, help God?
I do.
Mr. Jones, can you tell the court what you know about the events which occurred on the night of October 20th?
I sure can. That was the night Dutchman Schrader's farm was robbed. Hartsook was living at my place then, as it was my turn to board schoolmaster.
And do you remember anything unusual about the night of October 20th?
Yep. After we come home from spelling school and was all in bed, I heard Hartsook get up and leave the house about 1 o'clock in the morning. Then he woke me up when he come back again about 2:30.
I see. And in the morning, did Hartsook tell you where he'd been during the night?
No, sir.
And you didn't ask him?
No, sir.
Why not?
Because I figured that any honest man would speak up without being asked. So when Hartsook didn't offer to explain, I figured there was no use for to ask him because he'd only lie about it.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Your witness, Master Hartsook.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson. Mr. Jones,
I have reason to feel you were somewhat prejudiced against me.
I didn't say that.
No, you didn't. But you don't like me, do you?
Is that a fair question?
I think so. Unless you're ashamed of your answer.
All right, then. No, I don't like you, Hartsook.
Yes, and for a very good reason. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, let me tell you about it. On the morning after the robbery, Pete Jones headed a lynch mob that was setting out to get me. But something stopped him. Can you remember what it was, Mr. Jones?
Well, I...
Let me refresh your memory. The mob and its leader were stopped because its leader was knocked unconscious. Mr. Jones, who knocked you unconscious? Tell the truth.
You did.
Therefore, it might be possible for you to be prejudiced against me. Don't you agree?
I don't know.
But you would say that it is possible.
Yes, I suppose so.
Very well, then. Now tell us, why were you leading that mob?
We was out to get you for robbery. This district don't like thieves, Master Hartsook.
Indeed. Then I suggest that you might consider getting out of town, Mr. Jones.
What do you mean?
On the night of the robbery, I saw three men riding in the moonlight together on the highway. One of the men was riding a horse which had a white marking on its left forefoot. And the very next morning, I found you, Pete Jones, in your barn feeding a horse with a white marking on its left forefoot. The same horse that I had seen on the highway.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hassan. Sure, I got a horse with a white front foot, but that don't prove I'm a thief. And suppose you did see me on the road, which you didn't. Does that prove that I'm a highwayman?
I wonder. That's a very good point, Mr. Jones. Every man and woman in this county believes that I'm a highwayman because I was on the highway. But as you have just pointed out, what does it prove? Does it prove that I am a highwayman? No more questions. You may step down, Mr. Jones.
The state would like to call Miss Hannah Thompson to the stand. Miss Hannah Thompson, is she here?
Yes, I'm coming.
Good work, Master Hartsook. We'll keep going in here while I get going outside and find out what's happened to Walter Johnson.
No sign of him yet?
No, so I'll just take a little walk over to his rooms and see what's detaining him. We got to have his testimony.
Miss Thompson, you were a bound girl, are you not?
Yes, sir.
Well, will you tell the court just what that means in your case?
It means that I became a ward of the county when my father died, and my mother was sent to the poorhouse when she could not support us.
By us, you mean you and your brother, Shockey Thompson?
Yes.
Continue.
Well, my brother Shockey went to live with a kind friend, John Pearson, the basket maker, and I was bound out to work for Mrs. Means for 6 years in return for my keep.
I see. And how much longer must you work for Mrs. Means?
3 years, but I don't see what this has to do with the case.
Oh, it has a great deal to do, Miss Thompson. I want to emphasize that your particular position in life was very low and poor when Master Hartsook first showered you with his attentions.
How do you mean?
I mean this. Hartsook is a man of low character, and accordingly, he took advantage of your unfortunate position.
Oh, no.
Hartsook thought he could use you in his robbery schemes, but you proved to be too honest. You would not compromise because, essentially, you are an honest girl and you cannot be bought.
No. I mean, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Are you honest or aren't you? Can you be bought or can't you? Answer me, then. What kind of a girl are you?
I'm honest.
Perhaps, but I'm not so sure. Let us continue. Hartsook found out that you couldn't be bought in ordinary ways, but he learned that there was one way that you could be bought, wasn't there? Miss Thompson, that night after the spelling school, you saw something on the highway. And Hartsook found out about it, and he was worried for fear you would talk. He wondered how he could silence you. And then he found out that your brother was about to be taken away from Pearson and sent to the poorhouse. And Hartsook knew that you would do anything to save your brother.
No.
I say yes. Hartsook offered to send your brother out of the county and save him from the poorhouse if you would agree not to tell what you saw that night on the highway. Miss Thompson, tell the court what you saw.
I...
Come now, Miss Thompson, speak up. What did you see on the highway?
I saw Ralph Hartsook.
You saw him from your bedroom window, didn't you?
Yes, he was standing on the road.
And what was he doing there?
I don't know. He was just walking.
A likely story. What would you guess that a man might be doing on the highway
at 2 o'clock in the morning on the night that an honest farmer's home was robbed? Or did you promise not to tell about Hartsook's part in the robbery because he helped your brother?
My brother's escape had nothing to do with the robbery. Ralph Hartsook didn't offer to save my brother because of that.
Oh, he had another reason, perhaps?
Yes. A reason that you, Mr. Bronson, would not understand. Ralph Hartsook has a love for his fellow beings. He dislikes suffering. He dislikes poverty. And he disapproves of the poorhouse. He saved my brother because I asked him to.
Well. Just like that. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I want you all to get a very clear picture of what Miss Thompson has just told us. Ralph Hartsook, the honest schoolmaster, told her, the poorest and most miserable girl, a bound girl, mind you, he told her that he did not believe in poverty. He told her that she suffered, and he did not believe in that. He told her that he did not believe in the poorhouse. He told her that he loved his fellow beings. And I suppose that he told this poor girl that he loved her. He took advantage of her, the scoundrel. I'll tell you why Ralph Hartsook helped Shockey Thompson get away. He did it because he did not want Hannah Thompson to tell what she had seen on the highway. Ralph Hartsook returning home from the robbery of the Dutchman's farm. Your witness, Master Hartsook.
I have no questions. But if the court will permit, I would like to comment.
Proceed. You may return to your seat, Miss Thompson.
Thank you.
I have this to say. Hannah Thompson is an innocent girl. She's an honorable girl. I did not attempt to beguile her with promises. I did not threaten her. I did not compromise her by offering to help her brother in return for her silence. Aside from his attempts to slander me and ruin the character of Hannah Thompson, Mr. Bronson was able to prove but one point. He proved that I was on the road. But I repeat, my presence on the road does not prove that I committed a crime.
Very well, then, Master Hartsook. What were you doing on the road on the night of October 20th, the night of the robbery?
I was walking in the moonlight.
Order! Order in the courtroom!
Master Hartsook, walking in the moonlight. Do you expect me to believe that?
No.
Then why did you say it?
Because it's the truth, Mr. Bronson. And throughout this entire trial, you have refused to believe the truth. So why should I expect you to begin believing it now?
Thank you, Master Hartsook. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, draw your own conclusions from the hysterical speech which you have just heard. I am prepared to meet it with facts. Will Mr. Pete Banta please come to the stand?
Yes, sir.
What? Master Hartsook, I'm back.
Thank goodness. Tell me, did you find Walter Johnson?
Well, I found him, but I can't guarantee that he'll testify. Dr. Small's been talking to him. Johnson's pretty scared. That's why he didn't want to come into court.
Is Johnson here now?
Yes. He just sat down. There and back at Dr. Small.
Yes. I wish we had him sitting here beside us.
He won't. He's scared.
Well, he's our only witness unless Pearson shows up, and that isn't likely now.
Now, Mr. Banta, what is your profession?
My what?
What do you do?
Well, I go to school when there is any.
I see. And what school do you go to?
Flat Creek District School.
Mm-hmm. And how long has Master Hartsook been in charge at the Flat Creek School?
About a month.
And have you ever missed a single day of school?
No, sir, not one day.
Then I take it that we can safely say that you have seen the master for at least 5 full days of every week for the past month. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Then we can also take it that you can recognize him when you see him.
Yes, sir.
Even in the dark?
Yes, sir. The master wears a city hat.
Then will you kindly tell the court what you saw from your home on the night of October 20th?
Well, our place is just about 100 yards from Dutchman Schrader's, what was robbed. And on that night, I seed the master and another man come sneaking out of the Dutchman.
Who was the other man?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to say unless it was.
Very good. But you are sure that you did see Master Hartsook?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, there is your final proof. Witness after witness has testified against the character of Ralph Hartzell. I myself pulled aside the curtain and allowed you to inspect his relationship with Hannah Thompson, the poor bound girl, and her miserable brother. You heard her testify that she saw Hartzook on the road. Mr. Pete Jones heard Hartzook prowling around in the early hours of the morning. Hartzook himself has admitted to that charge. And now Pete Banter swears he saw Ralph Hartzook come out of the Dutchman's farm. And so I say to you, Ralph Hartzook is guilty.
And I say he's innocent.
It's Pearson, the basket maker. He'd come at last.
He's just in time, too.
Yeah, yeah. You'll have to excuse me, but I've been away and I didn't but just get back. Can I testify?
You may.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartzook, do you claim this witness?
I do.
John Pearson, do you swear?
Yes, sir, I sure do. If I had to ever get to going, you'd have to clear the courtroom.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
All right, yes, I do.
Mr. Pearson, I want you to realize that the testimony which you are about to give may place your life in jeopardy.
I object.
On what grounds?
Why, intimidating the witness.
But he's my witness, Mr. Brown.
Objection overruled.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Pearson.
Don't worry none about me, Master Hartsook. I ain't afeard of no man. Now, sir, I fit in 1812 with General Winfield Scott. I was at Lundy's Lane.
Of course, Mr. Pearson, of course. And now, can you tell us what you know of the robbery of Dutchman Schrader's farm on the night of October 20th?
What I know?
Why, I seen him.
Who, Mr. Pearson?
I seen the thieves, the ones that robbed the Dutchman's farm. That's what I see it as a Thursday night. Guess I must have took a little too much at Welch's store. Whiskey, that is. So I laid me down in the road to rest. Well, sir, I slept, I reckon it was about 3 hours. And then about 1 o'clock, I woke up and started making for home. And just as I started by Pete Jones's place, I see 3 men on horseback.
I see. And did you recognize these 3 men?
Yep, one of them I did. One of them I recognized for sure. Recognized him, recognized his horse.
And who was that man?
It is Pete Jones there. That's who it was.
Hey, order! Order! Order in the court!
Yeah, let's have a little order here. I ain't finished yet. And riding right close behind the 3 men was Dr. Small.
That's all. You're a witness, Mr. Bronson.
No, thank you, Master Hartsook. No questions, Mr. Pearson.
No questions? How come?
Because I don't question old drunks, Mr. Pearson.
Why, you...
Your Honor, I consider this testimony worthless. Why, this man's appearance is nothing more than a shabby theatrical trick. He admits that he was so drunk that he went to sleep in the road. And then he expects us to believe his statements about what he thinks he saw when he came out of his alcoholic stupor. No, thank you. No questions.
If the court pleases. If the court pleases.
Dr. Small?
May I make a statement?
You may. Come forward, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no personal interest in this, except that as a professional man, I am sorry to see another professional man discredit his profession. The evidence against Master Hartsook would seem to be quite overwhelming, and I would not feel compelled to add a feather to it. If it were not for the fact that my own name has been mentioned several times by Hartsook and his confederates.
What's he up to?
I'm not sure. Listen.
It has been stated that I was on the road in Flat Creek on the night of October 20th. However, I am prepared to swear that I was not in Flat Creek after 10 o'clock on the night of the robbery.
Surely Dr. Small is not defending himself against the charge of robbery which has been brought against me.
I am not. If the court pleases, I am prepared to swear as to my whereabouts on that night. Not because I feel it is necessary to clear my name. My reputation speaks for itself. I offer my statement because it proves that Master Hartsook and Company's story about horsemen on the road is nothing but a tissue of lies. And I should like to introduce a witness to support my statement. Walter Johnson.
Doggone that, Small. He's beaten us to the punch.
But the first punch isn't the whole fight, Bud. I think Small's done us a favor by putting Johnson on the stand. At least we'll get a chance at him now.
I sure do hope I made a convert. Johnson tells the truth. Small's days are numbered.
Well, I'm going to make sure that Johnson stays converted. Hand me that Bible, Bud.
Your Honor.
Yes?
I realize that this is a most unusual request. But I feel that the testimony which is about to be given is most vital. May I administer the oath to the witness?
I object. On what grounds?
Why, well, it just isn't done. It's not according to the letter of the law.
Very true, Mr. Bronson. But there can sometimes be more to justice than the letter of the law. I fail to see why Master Hartsook should not swear the witness in. Proceed.
Walter Johnson.
Yes, sir?
Place your hand on this sacred book.
Yes, sir.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
Yes, yes, I do, I swear.
Thank you. Take the witness, Mr. Bronson.
Very clever, Hartsook. Now, what is your profession, Mr. Johnson?
I'm a medical student. I study with Dr. Small.
I see. And will you please tell the court what you know of the whereabouts of Dr. Small on the night of the robbery?
On the night of the robbery?
Yes.
I think that was a Thursday.
Of course it was a Thursday. Thursday the 20th.
Yes, the 20th of October.
Well, go on, lad. Tell us about the night of the robbery.
On the night of the robbery. I can't go on.
Oh, what am I going to do?
He's fainted.
Bud, I think your conversion took. That boy is wrestling with the devil. And I think Dr. Small may have overreached
himself. I'll help him. I'm a doctor. The boy's fainted. I'll help him. Get me some brandy, somebody.
Oh, I'll testify tomorrow.
You fool. Get up and get on that witness stand or you'll never live to see tomorrow.
Oh, thank you. Here, drink this, Walter. You'll feel better.
Small looks mighty worried.
Yes, he should. And he's going to be more worried when I get through with Johnson. He can't back out now.
Now, Mr. Johnson, tell the court your story.
Well, Dr. Small was not in Flat Creek on that night. He was with me. We was together in my room. I was studying and he was learning me. And he stayed with me all the night and did not leave until after breakfast the following morning.
That's what?
That's the way... I mean, that's the truth. Dr. Small was not in Flat Creek that night. He was with me. We was together in my room.
That will be all, Mr. Johnson. If the court pleases, I'm afraid that Mr. Johnson is not feeling well. Certainly he does not seem well enough to testify further in a court of law.
Just one moment, Mr. Bronson. It is my opinion that Walter Johnson's physical condition is excellent. I'm afraid it is his mind that is not well. In short, his conscience is bothering him. You have any more questions, Mr. Bronson?
Oh, but I...
Well, no.
Very well. Walter Johnson, do you believe in a power greater than ourselves?
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Johnson, just a few minutes ago you swore that you would tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Did you not?
Yes, I did.
God watches us all, Walter Johnson. No sparrow falls without his knowing it. No sinner falls without his knowing. And no man who has sinned and wants to repent his sins is neglected by God. Did you know that, Walter Johnson?
Yes, yes.
There is always hope for the sinner, Walter, because God is forgiving, God is merciful, and God is all understanding even when men are not. Don't you think that offered hope to the sinner, Walter Johnson?
Yes.
Did you love your mother, Walter?
Yes, sir, I did.
Did you love your mother a lot?
Yes, sir.
And did your mother love you?
Yes.
And did she forgive you when you did wrong?
Yes.
And no matter what you did, she stood ready at your side?
Yes, sir.
Well, God is the same way, Walter Johnson. He is standing at your side. He will help you if you will but ask his forgiveness. Have you ever been to a revival?
Yes, sir.
A friend of mine took a young man to a revival just a few nights ago. Brother Sutton was preaching at that meeting. And my friend took the young man to save his soul. That young man was just about your age, Walter. And that young man, he was taken to the revival because my friend wanted to put into him the fear of Almighty God. That young man was you, Walter. Do you remember?
The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. With the fear of God... The love of God is ever consistent. Young man, you who have followed the counsel of evil companions and chosen evil pursuits, You are being dragged down to hell. Down, down, down. You are standing right on the very crumbling brink of hell. At this moment, the smell of brimstone is on your garments. The hot breath of hell is in your face. The devils are waiting for you. Delay, and you're damned, yes, damned. You may die before sunset, yeah. You may never get out of your chair, yeah. The awful angel of death is just ready to strike you down.
No, 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 don't let the devil get me. I don't want to go to hell. I'll tell. I lied, but I'll tell the truth. Dr. Small, he robbed the Dutchman's farm. Dr. Small and Pete Jones and me, we did it.
It's all Dr. Small.
Watch out, Dr. Small has a gun. Grab him. Get Dr. Small before he gets away. Well, Miss Hannah Thompson and Master Ralph Harsop, please step before the bench.
Get up there, you two.
Your Honor.
Your Honor.
Master Hartsook, you have been the victim of grave injustice. We must give thanks to God that further miscarriage has been averted. And for the apprehension of the true criminals, namely Dr. Small, Pete Jones, and Walter Johnson. Now, Master Hartsook, you are hereby discharged from the bar of this court and from the bar of public sentiment without a suspicion of guilt. The court congratulates you on your acquittal. And as for you, Miss Thompson, well, this court now declares that Miss Hannah Thompson, presently in the state of bondage imposed upon her because of probity and circumstances, may be freed from bondage if somewhere in this community there's someone who will care for her and provide for her?
If the court pleases. I would be greatly honored to assume that obligation. If Miss Thompson will have me.
Oh, Ralph. Yes.
Hannah, my darling.
The Hoosier Schoolmaster by Edward Eggleston is one of America's novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week to a radio version of Life on the Mississippi by Samuel Clemens. And remember that there's a world of entertainment and information to be found in your local public library. Many American novels in the 1947 summer series are included in the useful Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Hoosier Schoolmaster is adapted for radio by Richard E. Davis. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and the orchestra directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Ralph Hartsook was played by Harry Elders, Hannah by Gene Mowry, Bud by Hugh Rowland, Bronson by Don Gallagher, and the judge by Cliff Zubir. Others were Boris Aplon, Johnny Coons, Charles Flynn, Sherman Marks, Cliff Norton, Jeff Pugh, and Duke Watson. This is Don Elder. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.